You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Tuesday edition. This will be a little shorter edition. I got a little jammed up, and just for information, I'm a little bit behind in post-production. I'll definitely have all of this week's shows up by Saturday, but I'm still going to be about two shows behind most of the week. I just have other things I have to do that are more pressing. What I wanted to do today is start off with a speech that Vice President Mike Pence gave to our ally, NATO allies, in Estonia. He's on a Baltic tour visiting Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. And it's not getting much coverage. That's understandable. I think CNN is still talking about, yes, Trump colluding with the Russians. Eventually, CNN's going to discover that their credibility is below zero. No one listens to them, but that's their choice. And I've been asking myself, why are they continuing this? To feed the paranoia of the lying lunatic left? I mean, the only reason we've been hearing this, and it started right after the election, they had to come up with a reason. I mean, the Clintons, for why they failed to, the smartest woman in the world was going to be elected president, and apparently that didn't happen. Now, the polls were not that far off. As a matter of fact, they were fairly close in terms of the popular vote, but you have to win the Electoral College to win. But they go on and on and on about this, and the American people are not interested in it. They're turning them off, click, 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 or switching to another channel. So I kept saying, why are they doing this? Because they're hurting themselves more than anything else. And they haven't come up with anything. They've come up empty, and I think that's their problem. They'll never admit a mistake, so they'll pursue it and pursue it and pursue it. Eventually, I think even they will conclude that no one cares, no one believes them, and then they're going to have to try to gain back their credibility. I don't think they're going to be able to. I think they might be in another death spiral. We have one in healthcare, and definitely CNN. At one time, a leader. That's something you need to understand. At one time, they dominated that television space, if you will, no longer. They're fading fast, and as far as I'm concerned, good riddance. And that's the problem when you become an organ or an organization for propaganda, in this case, progressive propaganda, entirely for the Democratic Party. Well, more than half the country are not Democrats. They better realize that, because more and more people are leaving both parties, including the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And you combine that with people that even are, that at one time were Democrats or might even consider coming back to the party, they're turned off. So the Democratic Party is in disarray. I think maybe an explanation is to hide the fact that the Democratic Party has divisions, major divisions. Both parties have major divisions. And the core is very much an establishment big government party. So they're still going on about the Trump collusion or apparent collusion. No evidence. And they're going on and on about his son meeting with the Russian attorney. It's nothing, folks. They're beating it to death. Who are they beating to death? Themselves. What they should have been covering is legitimate news stories, and there are a lot of them. And the one I think needs to get a lot of attention because we live in very much in dangerous times. North Korea is probably, if you listen to the news, the greatest threat facing the United States. Well, I know they're developing missiles, they develop nuclear weapons, but there almost a dozen, depends how you count and who you count, nations that have nuclear weapons. And they've made the calculation, this is North Korea, that nations that don't have nuclear weapons face intervention by the United States and its allies, and nations that have nuclear weapons, that's less likely. That's the calculation that Iran or the Islamic Republic of Iran has made, and that's the calculation that North Korea has made. Now, something you need to understand, because it needs to be emphasized, I think, a lot more, is the fact that they're a poor country, a small, poor country. Where are they getting the technology, the equipment to develop this technology? It's coming from China, and that's the inescapable conclusion, and they're using Chinese banks to do it. So China needs to be very, very careful, because we have a president today that's going to call their bluff. Either North Korea dismantles its nuclear weapons and missiles, and it's made it very, very clear they're not going to do it. It's off the table and as far as the North Koreans, or the Trump administration reluctantly will take them out. And I think that's in the cards. I think you're going to see a military strike, not to start a world war, not to really change regimes, but to knock out their bomb factories, their missile factories, and their research facilities that are developing these weapons. And what's interesting, the American people think that the bigger threat is North Korea. Well, yes and no, because I think, quite frankly, if the Chinese wanted to stop North Korea, they could. Now, they will deny that they can. But who's their major trading partner? More than 80%, it's through China. And yes, Congress passed the sanctions bill, and North Korea, Russia, and Iran were all on it. But sanctions take forever, and they really don't have much of an impact, especially on North Korea and Iran, that I won't say don't care, but don't want to be part of the international community. It's very different for North Korea. They're very much a pariah nation, and their sole backer, actually they have two, but it's primarily communist China. Next would be Russia. And obviously Iran has oil, and they're using their revenues from oil to fund. If you're looking where the money's coming from to do this, it's coming from Iran. That's their key client. It's the worst country in terms of freedom. It is a totalitarian regime of the worst sort. People are undernourished. You don't want to visit there. You're foolish if you visit there, especially now. And if you're American, you're out of your mind. And I would make it clear to Americans, I'd ban travel to North Korea. But people, for some reason, reporters or even students, want to visit. You're taking your life in your hands. If you don't value your life, go to North Korea. They don't value life. Given the threats that we face, and something needs to be said right up front, the American people don't want to go to war. Neither does the Japanese or South Korean people. They don't want war. I don't really think China wants a war. But the only way to get China's attention is to, and again in private, not in public, make it very, very clear if they do not cease and desist, take down, eliminate their both missile and nuclear capabilities, then we'll unfortunately have to not go the sanctions route, put an embargo on all imports to the United States from China. And that plays right into President Trump's hand. I think Donald Trump, in terms of his doctrine and foreign policy, tends to be a non-interventionist, but he's also a realist. He will intervene where the national interest of the United States is directly threatened and demonstrably threatened, and the American people understand that and back him. Otherwise, he's not an appeaser like former president now, Barack Obama, with his strategic patience and downsizing the military. He's not an appeaser. And it's going to take time to really see what is the foreign policy of the Trump administration. But everything I'm seeing and hearing, I think there will be a so-called, and I hate the words, a surgical strike. There's no such thing as a surgical strike. There isn't. We can be very, very accurate, but there's almost invariably going to be collateral damage, especially if you're hitting targets in cities. Now, what's important to understand that the missiles as well as the nuclear research, development, manufacturing facilities are buried in mountains. They're not in cities, to the best of my knowledge. And I think there will be a conventional strike. Both cruise missiles from destroyers, submarines, as well as bombers. And there might very, very well be, because you might need bunker busters, because if they're in mountains, it's difficult to get at them. But I think that's in the cards. Now, the question is, how good is U.S. intelligence? Well, we have very good satellite intelligence. I don't think we have very much human intelligence, except through our allies, mainly South Korea. And that's going to be critical. To the extent that we can truly pinpoint what the targets are, we are going to take him out. And I think he'll get the support of the American people. Now, I'm not as convinced yet where exactly they stand. You're always going to hear the military, CIA, national security. They're always, it's imminent. Well, that can go for many, many years. But North Korea, of all the nations that are on the brink of going nuclear with missile capability, they're probably the leaders. And given the United States is a superpower, remember, the American Republic is largely dead, where the American Empire, we intervene in country after country. And because of that, we're not going to be pushed around, and Donald Trump's not going to be pushed around by North Korea. Now, he's going to give time for diplomacy to maybe work or maybe not work, but at some point he's going to issue the orders. And I think we're already in the process of building up our capabilities and being able to contain whatever we do. See, the easy part, I think, is actually trying to destroy or attacking where we think those sites are. But once you do that, you're at war. We're at war then. And then the question is, what is going to be the response of the North Koreans? And that's the sticky point. Because if they decide to start again, remember, it's a ceasefire, the Korean War, we're at war. And they have artillery and rockets in range, assault, and the estimates are more than 1 million people would be killed. That's why I say the South Koreans don't want this. The Japanese don't want this. I don't think the American people want war, but they don't want this regime threatening its neighbors as well as the United States. And if China can't rein them in, then China will pay a stiff price. And I don't think they're prepared for it. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But remember, I believe at some point in time, the Communist Party in China is going to fall. It's only a matter of time, and they have a problem. You have millions of people leaving the land and going to the cities every year. They have to employ a lot of people, and they have to rely on international trade. And we're one of the biggest trading partners, I think the biggest trading partner, but so is Europe. And yes, you need to understand if an embargo is in place on Chinese goods. And I think that's, you haven't heard much about that, but I think in the back rooms, both U.S. and Chinese, they're aware of this. That's why I say it's not in the United States' interest, the people of the United States' interest, or frankly, the Chinese' interest. But they bear a large burden of fueling this. And now the bills are going to become due, and there will be, if not a regime change, the nuclear capabilities of North Korea will be destroyed. When? Who knows? I've heard people say August. You'll learn it on the news the next day, and then we'll be at war. So I'm kind of giving you a war warning that is in the cards. We live in a dangerous world. I frankly think the bigger threat is Iran in terms of the instability it's causing in the Middle East. And who are their allies? Russia and China. Again, China. And Iran is funding and getting the benefits of the results of the nuclear testing as well as the missile testing. And they have a lot of money, not as much because oil prices are way down, but they have a lot of natural gas, a lot of oil. So they have the money to spend, unlike North Korea. North Korea is largely a basket case that relies on communist China and Iran, maybe a little from Russia, but not much. Remember, North Korea borders on communist China, but Russia is also there on the coast. Look at a map. So what are we doing to contain Russia? Well, Vice President Mike Pence is doing a tour of the Baltic nations. And let's hear his speech, and I'll interject my comments as I've listened to it already, but let's listen to parts of it. And I'm going to skip the early part where he's going over the introduction.
Today is the enhanced forward presence, the embodiment of the NATO alliance. Free peoples from free nations, standing together as brothers and sisters in arms. The good book tells us if you owe debts, pay debts. If honor, then honor. If respect, then respect. And I stand before you today to pay a debt of gratitude, honor, and respect to each one of you on behalf of the President of the United States of America and the American people. You are the best of us, heroes all. And you are here, including the Americans among you so far away from home, because the United States and Europe are bound together by history, a time-honored alliance, and the abiding oath of friendship. And most of all, we are bound together in our devotion to freedom. Under President Trump, the policy of the United States of America is to place the security and the prosperity of America first. But as the President has made clear, and as my presence here today demonstrates, America first does not mean America alone.
Now, that's the key point. There are a lot of foreign policy, so-called experts, people from the Council of Foreign Relations, that are students, if you will, of the United States foreign policy, diplomacy. They don't think much of Trump, but they didn't elect Trump. Trump, in my mind, is a realist. So am I. I'm a non-interventionist, and I believe Trump is. I believe in a very strong national defense where I part company with the neoconservatives, which I'll be talking about a little bit later, is that I don't support nation building at all. I think it's a bad idea. I don't believe the United States should be policeman of the world, even though de facto it is. And part of the reason is when you intervene in country after country, the people that live in that country start to resent you. I remember in the 50s and 60s, the name was the Ugly Americans or Occupiers. It even becomes uglier where U.S. military or the CIA or both are engaged in combat warfare in a nation. Even if we come to liberate people, and we have over a period of time, especially where you have not defeated your enemies, they begin to not only resent you, but start to kill you. And that's the price of intervention. It's costly in lives, first and foremost. The lives of the people of the countries that we intervene in, which is seldom even mentioned, and is usually a lot higher than deaths of American military or CIA or civilian contractors. So I never favor, my default is non-intervention, much as the founding fathers of this nation were. They were what today would be called classical liberals or libertarians, and did not believe in entangling alliances. But NATO is that alliance, and it is entangling. And there's Article 5, which means attack on any of these nations is considered an attack on the United States. And by treaty, we are committed to supporting that nations, those nations. And they have supported us, for example, in Afghanistan and in Iraq. But what does this ultimately lead to? More intervention inevitably leads to more intervention. And where you have a resistance movement, not the Democratic Party, I'm not talking about them, but for example, in Syria and Iraq, the Islamic State, ISIS, it leads to a prolonged insurgency. And they go underground, especially when they're losing. And they are losing. It's not that they can't be beat. It's the price and the time it takes to destroy them. And counterinsurgency wars take years. Years. I've heard experts say at least 10 years on the best of circumstances. Oh, the easy targets can be destroyed. But they're going to be burying themselves deep underground blend in with the people, and the people fear him. And remember that what is the problem in the Middle East? You have a religious split between the Sunnis and the Shia. The majority, and they're part of Islam, the majority of Muslims are Sunnis. They're different sects, just like Christianity. You have Catholics, you have Protestants, and Protestants, you have Baptists, Methodists, Episcopalian. You have the same situation in Islam. But the majority are Sunnis, roughly 90%. But in Iran, the majority are Shia, and neither the Sunni or Shia get along. It's been a raging, on and off, civil war, hostilities based on, it's a religious sectarian war, because sectarian in the sense of one of the religious sects. And the mischief players are, by far, Iran. They want to be the dominant regional power in the Middle East. That's their objective. And they want to have nuclear weapons, they want to have missile capability, and they will use it against the Sunnis as well as the Israelis, and ultimately Europeans, and that's why they're paying North Korea to assist them in testing the weapons as well as developing the missiles. You can't go it alone. You need allies. But you need allies to pay their fair share. Now, the United States benefits immensely having this North Atlantic Treaty, but the majority of the nations simply are not living up to their minimum commitment of 2%. Some are. Estonia is one of them. Poland is another, Greece, but Germany, Spain, and even Canada are the worst offenders. They're not paying anywhere near. It's the commitment is in terms of percentage of GDP, gross domestic product, or the output or production of the United States. Let's continue with Mike Pence.
In my meeting earlier today with the leaders of the Baltic states, I gave them the same message that I'm here to deliver to each and every one of you. The United States of America is with you. America stands with the nations and people of the Baltic states, and we always will. We stand with our NATO allies in our commitment to your security, and under President Trump, the United States of America stands in defense of the timeless values that unite America and Europe together in the West: freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. As the President expressed in his historic speech in Warsaw just last month, these values are, in his words, the priceless ties that bind us together as nations, as allies, and as a civilization. Western civilization is a beautiful mosaic of diverse, free nations and peoples, each with their own unique and special histories, cultures, languages, and traditions, all of which deserve to be recognized, cherished, and protected. And Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania are sterling examples of our civilization's vitality and commitment to freedom. Next year marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of freedom in the Baltic states. You've clung to that birthright ever since, even in the face of those who would take it from you. For the better part of this last century, your nations were locked behind the Iron Curtain. That communist regime personified everything free peoples reject. It sought to eradicate your identity, your traditions, your language, the very essence of who you are, the cherished ties of family and faith. But through all the decades of brutal occupation, I'm proud to say the United States of America never accepted the illegitimate claims of the Soviet Union on your three Baltic states. Your perseverance inspired free nations around the world, and it was our honor to stand with you. It is no coincidence or accident of history that it was right here in Tallinn that some of the very first cracks in the Iron Curtain first appeared. You had preserved your memory of the past as the foundation of your future. You kept the flame of freedom alive in your hearts. It was only 30 years ago that more than 300,000 Estonians began to gather together to sing the songs of your land and your people. As in the days of Hezekiah, the singers sang, and soon your culture and your nation were renewed. Shortly thereafter, your brothers and sisters in Latvia and Lithuania joined the chorus of a singing revolution. And in 1989, you joined hands in the Baltic Way, an unbroken line of unbroken will, connecting Tallinn, Riga, and Vilnius. So strong were your voices, so firm was your grip, that the Soviet Union crumbled before you, and you reclaimed your freedom from the ashes of communism. And since that day, the people of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania have reached out your hands in friendship to Europe and to the United States, and today, together, we stand as one. The United States and Europe are stronger together than we will ever be apart. And so it was only 13 years ago that we welcomed the Baltic states into the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the most successful mutual defense alliance in the history of the world. Baltic states embody the spirit of our alliance. Your commitment to NATO's common defense inspires us all. At the Wales Summit in 2014, every NATO member committed to move towards spending a minimum of 2% of their gross domestic product on defense within a decade. President Trump has made it clear that every NATO member must, in his words, finally contribute their fair share and meet their financial obligations. At this moment, I'm proud to stand in the heart of one of only five NATO member nations that meets this basic standard. Estonia joins the United States, the United Kingdom, Greece, and Poland in meeting or exceeding their obligation for our common defense. And I'm happy to report that by the end of 2018, Latvia and Lithuania will join these nations in fulfilling their promise. And President Trump expects all of our NATO allies to follow your lead. The President and I are grateful for the leadership and the example of the Baltic leaders gathered here. To Estonia in particular, as your presidency of the Council of the European Union, know that you have the United States' full support in your call for stronger internal security in Europe, stronger external borders, a more robust partnership between the EU and NATO, and increased European defense spending.
Now, I want to interject a couple of points. I think part of the Trump doctrine is, yes, we'll remain in NATO, but you're going to have to pay your fair share. In other words, no more free riders. That's what economists call what many of the nations that are way below it. I have a chart showing that 2% target. Remember, that's minimum. Doesn't mean you can't spend more. The United States spends way more. It's roughly about 3.5%. It's going to vary from year to year. You know, of the major powers, France is the closest that does not meet it. It's at roughly 1.8%. And then you have Turkey, Norway, again, close, but not there. If you're at the minimum, if you're not at the minimum, and especially when this goes on year in, year out, I'm with President Trump. You got to pay back. You should be above 2% if for the last decade or more, in some nation cases, you haven't been meeting it. In other words, there's no more free riders. And nations like Germany, Spain, Canada, and others need to get with the program. Because what are they doing? They're spending their money on other things. You see, their welfare state, just like the United States welfare state, is in financial difficulties. In the United States, we see it in a national debt of over $20 trillion and unfunded liabilities for Social Security and Medicare, and now Obamacare. And they're very estimates, depending on what actuarial assumptions you want to make, but over $200 trillion. It's totally, completely unsustainable in the United States. We spend a lot of money on our military, and we produce a lot of military equipment that we do sell to the nations of Europe. I'm not saying the United States doesn't benefit from having an alliance and supplying arms that other nations pay for, but if you're truly going to have an alliance, it has to be done at a mutually beneficial arrangement, and many of these nations, they're 29 in total. You have 20 nations that are not living up to what they agreed to. So it's time to pay up. First, it's time to meet your annual commitment and then make up for the many, many years that you were subpar, below your commitment. That is part of the Trump doctrine. We're not going to be patient any longer because all nations have their issues or problems. And it's either these governments either get with the program or maybe they should not be in NATO, nor given the guarantee that the United States with other nations will come to their defense. Now, one thing that needs to be said, Europe has been a battleground for centuries. The bloodiest war, it was in Europe, World War I. And at the end of the war, what happened? There no longer was a German Empire. There no longer was a Russian Empire, an Ottoman Empire, an Austria-Hungarian Empire. There still remained the British Empire, the Japanese Empire, and yes, the beginnings of the American Empire. But because of the peace treaty, what happened? World War II. Again, because the winners took it out on the Germans. And the Germans, the theory was they were stabbed in the back. They weren't stabbed in the back, but that rose gave rise to Hitler, fascism in Italy. And then after World War II, for all practical purposes, there no longer was a Japanese Empire, and there no longer was a British Empire. Only in name only. The nations were broke. And at that point, there only remained two superpowers, the United States and Russia. But Russia lost millions, tens of millions of people. They paid a very high bloody price, and that's why their population today is declining significantly. While they have nuclear weapons and a lot of resources, they are very much a declining nation. They don't have an empire anymore. So the last nation standing was the United States. And for about 25 years after World War II, because many of these nations were in rubble, we were the nation supplying the world. But today we have competitors, dozens of competitors, many of them rising from the ashes. It's a competitive situation, and all nations, if they're going to enter into an alliance, should and must meet their obligations as well as their debts. I'll play a little bit more of Mike Pence's speech.
This oath requires action, and every NATO member must renew their commitment to our common defense, and they must renew it now. A strong and united NATO is needed more today than at any point since the collapse of communism a quarter of a century ago. The adversaries we face are more numerous and sophisticated and asymmetrical than ever before. In this age, once distant threats have become local threats to nations and communities across the world. And so all free nations must band together to confront and overcome. As we speak, our alliance is taking the fight to radical Islamic terrorism on our terms, on their soil. And we will not rest and we will not relent until we hunt down and destroy ISIS at its source so it can no longer threaten our people, our allies, or our sacred gift of freedom. Baltic states are members of the global campaign to defeat ISIS, and the United States and our people are grateful for your action. And all three of your nations are participating in NATO's Resolute Support mission in Afghanistan, where our citizens have served together and sacrificed for many years. The people of the United States mourn the Estonian, Latvian, and Lithuanian citizens who have given their lives in the cause of freedom. They are heroes. And their names will always be enshrined in the hearts of the American people. But terrorism is not the only adversary we face. Just last week, our alliance and all the world saw the grave and growing threat posed by the missile capabilities of dangerous regimes in North Korea and Iran. Both regimes conducted provocative launches over a 24-hour span. Their actions have brought them closer to threatening our partners in their regions, our transatlantic alliance, and the American homeland itself. In these times of widening threats and provocations, we will stand together in defense of our alliance and all we hold dear. We all have a vital role to play, for all nations in this alliance loom large in the tapestry of freedom. America has no small allies. Today we stand where East meets West, on a great frontier of freedom. And no threat looms larger in the Baltic states than the specter of aggression from your unpredictable neighbor to the east. At this very moment, Russia continues to seek to redraw international borders by force, undermine the democracies of sovereign nations, and divide the free nations of Europe one against another. President Trump has called on Russia to cease its destabilizing activities in Ukraine and elsewhere, and to cease its support for hostile regimes like North Korea and Iran. And under President Trump, the United States will continue to hold Russia accountable for its actions, and we call on our European allies and friends to do the same. In a sign of our commitment, very soon, President Trump will sign legislation to strengthen and codify the United States sanctions against Russia. The preference of the United States is a constructive relationship with Russia based on cooperation, on common interests. Russia, too, has said that they would like to normalize relations with the United States. Regrettably, last week, Russia took the drastic step of limiting the United States' diplomatic presence in their nation. President Trump has made it clear. America is open to a better relationship with Russia, but the President and our Congress are unified in our message. A better relationship and the lifting of sanctions will require Russia to reverse the actions that caused the sanctions to be imposed in the first place. We hope for better days and better relations with Russia.
It's clear that, and I think Mike Pence states it later in the speech, that President Trump will be signing the bill that Congress passed last week with overwhelming majorities in both the House of Representatives and in the Senate, putting in sanctions against Russia, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and North Korea. That interferes with the actions of a president. It's Congress trying to reassert itself. But quite frankly, sanctions take very long periods of time and seldom work. I'm not a fan of sanctions. If we're truly threatened militarily by a nation, then there should be a debate. And under the Constitution, only Congress can declare war. And I don't think we're at that point yet, but in terms of North Korea, we're fast approaching it. I don't have time to go over the sanctions. I was going to spend a little bit more time on that. I obviously don't have time to deal with the last story. Namely, I think what's going on in Congress is an alliance between the neocons and the progressive Democrats. They're both progressives. They're both interventionists, both domestically and abroad. And I call them warmongers. They beat the drums. But you have to understand that the American people don't want to go to war. However, they consider the biggest threat today, and it will surprise many of you, is North Korea. I think that's debatable, but there are no easy decisions or options here because this could easily get out of hand and turn into a full-out conventional war, if not a nuclear war. This is a very dangerous situation, and I think diplomatically, pressure has to be brought to bear on China, and that means an embargo on their goods. That will get their attention, and that should happen sooner rather than after a military confrontation. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com.